You're listening to History Out Loud, Chat from the Stacks, a podcast by Calderdale Libraries. Presented by Jill Carpenter. So welcome back, listeners, to History Out Loud. And welcome, David Glover.
Hello, Jill.
Hello. Any listeners who been listening to the podcast for quite some time will know that David has recorded an episode with us before. It was on Lister Lane Cemetery, wasn't it?
That's right.
It was some time ago.
Yes.
And he's a local historian, so he does rather a lot of talks in and around the town on various subjects. And he's president of the Halifax Antiquarian Society as well. So, yes, you've steeped in the local history of our area.
Well, people say so, so I have to accept that I am.
Yes. So our subject for today is a seasonal one. Well, it's kind of seasonal. It's as seasonal as we can make it. Charles Dickens' visits to Halifax. That's what we're going to be discussing, amongst other things, other connections that he had in the town. So first of all, David, when did Charles Dickens visit Halifax and why?
So Charles Dickens' one and only visit to Halifax took place on the 16th of September, 1858. And he'd been invited to come to Halifax for a specific purpose, and that was to read from A Christmas Carol.
He'd been invited to read, but it wasn't a special occasion, was it? He travelled quite extensively, didn't he, reading?
Yes. A Christmas Carol was published towards the end of 1843. And, of course, it had a certain moral tale, the redemption of Scrooge, this unscrupulous miser, how he came to appreciate things which he hadn't been aware of before, particularly in connection with Christmas. And this whole story, The Christmas Carol, a novel, we might say it was developed into a kind of moral philosophy by Dickens, and he wanted to disseminate this moral philosophy by going round to different towns and reading an abbreviated version to the public. And as a result of this, he would travel around the country, around Great Britain, and he is said to have read A Christmas Carol in public 127 times in different towns and cities.
Wow. There was that aspect that it was something that he wanted to speak to people about, the moral tale, but it was also very lucrative, wasn't it? We mustn't forget
that.
Yes,
he wasn't doing it for nothing.
Yeah.
And of course, all these engagements he would get payments for.
Yes. So Charles Dickens, he comes to Halifax. Where did he speak? Where was he invited to speak?
He was invited to speak at the Oddfellows Hall in St. James's Road.
Do we know anything about the Oddfellows Hall? It didn't stay the Oddfellows Hall, did it? Though it became other things.
It did, yes. The building, the Oddfellows Hall, was opened in 1840 and had a tall, ornate, classical frontage with Corinthian columns. And it was founded as a meeting hall for the Independent Order of Oddfellows, a non-political and non-sectarian international fraternal order of fellowship.
Yeah.
The hall could be hired out to many other organisations too, and was used as a public gathering space, as it was for Dickens. In the 20th century, this building would become the Alhambra Cinema, and some older people may remember it because it wasn't demolished until 1963. It stood just above where the old Crossfield bus station was.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's such a shame about cinemas, isn't there? A lot of small towns had really good cinemas that ended up closing down and being demolished. I remember, because I grew up in Huddersfield, there were two or three cinemas there, and they're not there anymore.
so many have gone, and in the early days, of course, a number of them were just sort of simply founded in public halls. There were several
Yes.
in Halifax like that. The YMCA, the Marlborough Hall, and Northgate House. They served their purpose for a number of years before the purpose-built ones came in the 1930s.
I imagine his reading of A Christmas Carol, which had been published for some time by the time he was at the Odd Fellows Hall, was very popular. I'm sure he got a really good turnout. Do we know how it was received, his reading? Was it just over 2 hours it took him to read the abridged version?
Yes, and if you can imagine reading through the whole novel, although it's not one of his longer novels, it would take considerably longer than 2 hours, a lot longer to read through it. So he had a purposely edited version of A Christmas Carol, which he would read in public and which he could get through in just under 2 hours. We do know that it was very well received in public, and if you like, I can read a little from an account from 1858.
I was hoping you'd do that. Yes, go ahead.
So in the Halifax Courier for the 20th of September 1858, we have a report of the visit, and it goes like this. Mr. Charles Dickens in Halifax. On Thursday evening, Mr. Charles Dickens, the novelist, read his Christmas Carol in the Odd Fellows Hall. The audience was both large and fashionable. A small platform covered with green baize, lighted from the top, having a drab background, had been erected on the orchestra. There was a singularly shaped table covered with green baize, together with a water bottle and tumbler. This, simple enough, had nevertheless a considerable dramatic effect. Mr. Dickens made his appearance precisely at 8 o'clock, and after a few preliminary observations to the effect that he hoped the audience would consider themselves at liberty to express the feelings which the contents of his little book might call into play, he proceeded to read the two first chapters of the carol. There was then an interval of 10 minutes, at the close of which the two remaining chapters were gone through, the reading brought to a close at 10 o'clock. As Mr. Dickens has lately taken to exhibiting himself in public, and as the audience was no doubt composed of persons anxious rather to see the most eminent novelist of the day than to hear him read, we shall presume upon a few sentences touching Mr. Dickens' tout ensemble, that's his outfit, if you like. We by no means consider him the exquisite he was made to appear in many of the portraits of him published a few years ago. He is of middle stature, in habit neither spare nor full, and of an easy carriage. As far as his tailor had the making of him, he would sustain criticism also. His dress was both tasteful and simple, and those who speak of him as being well got up do him an injustice. His countenance, which is large and open, has a weather-beaten aspect and bears out the assertion that he is an indefatigable pedestrian. A thick moustache and a good beard lose much of their effect by lightness of colour, while the absence of hair immediately over the forehead adds to the vague expression of the face when seen from a distance. Viewed closely, however, it is a face revealing undoubted energy and decision, a face that tells of an iron will, of a fixity of purpose that bends everything to its own aims. Everybody must have been won over by the unaffected manner in which Mr. Dickens hurried onto the platform, besought his audience to feel at home, opened his book, and led off with, "Marley was dead," to begin with.
Thank you for reading that. That's lovely. It really does paint the picture of him being there, even down to the, you know, the green baize and the water bottle. Yeah. So people really did enjoy it, didn't they? There was a quote also in the Halifax Guardian, I think, from September in 1858. No doubt many were attracted by a desire to witness the features of one so celebrated in the gallery of England's literary characters, and of one whose works have obtained reputation at once extensive and lasting. And no doubt many more were attracted by a wish to hear that carol read by its author, which they had perused with such deep interest. And it goes on to talk about there being a kind of breathless silence in the auditorium, hanging on his every word. He charged people for these readings, but no doubt everybody felt it was worth every penny.
If I might just interject there, we have to see that he was reading to a middle-class audience, almost certainly the poor, who in effect he was trying to benefit remotely, were the ones he wanted to get a message over in favour of, but he wanted to inform those with a little more money, shall we say, how to benefit the poor on the basis of the moral message of A Christmas Carol.
That's a really good point. When he was doing the Pickwick Papers, which was like serialisation of stories, people used to pay a penny for other people to read the stories to them. The people who perhaps hadn't learnt to read, hadn't had an education, they were still able to enjoy his stories, and he was still very popular with people from all walks of life. So he was very well received in Halifax, but Dickens had a few things to say about the town, didn't he?
Yes, he wrote later about his time in Halifax. He said that he appreciated the audience and said they would have been worth reading for nothing, which of course he didn't.
No.
However, his opinion of the town of Halifax was rather different to his opinion of the audience. He said, "Halifax was too small for us." And he goes on to say, "It is as horrible a place as I ever saw, I think." Which is rather, I think, a slap in the face.
It's brutal.
It is brutal. There's an account in Hard Times of a town or part of a city, Coketown, which was perhaps a little like Halifax, an industrial town just developing with narrow streets and so on. I'll read briefly from this chapter in Hard Times, which was published in 1854. Yeah. "Nature was as strongly bricked out as killing airs and gases were bricked in. At the heart of the labyrinth of narrow courts upon courts and close streets upon streets, which had come into existence piecemeal, every piece in a violent hurry for some one man's purpose, and the whole an unnatural family, shouldering and trampling and pressing one another to death." We know very well from this and from other writings of Dickens, he was only too familiar with towns where the streets were dirty, tight, and impoverished. And that account from Hard Times perhaps could have been taken to describe parts of Halifax as they were in 1858.
Did he write that account before he visited Halifax?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. It's really referring to a part of London as far as we can discern. I mean, we have masses of information. The Ranger report of Halifax in 1851, the terrible conditions, which were beginning to improve by 1858, but the town was terribly polluted, terribly crammed full. What more can you say?
This situation is replicated all over the country. The way he describes it, it's very evocative. And this is why people still enjoy Dickens today, really, isn't it? Because of the way he writes and the way he brings characters and places to life.
And they have such wonderful names, don't they? He invented a lot of surnames, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
Some of it.
I like, in Our Mutual Friend, Mr. Venus, the chap who has the taxidermy shop. Do you have a favourite one?
Oh, that's a difficult one. I mean, I've always thought that the name Scrooge from A Christmas Carol, you have that impression somehow that the name Scrooge has become synonymous with a grasping miser. It's because we know the story, but Scrooge, Scrooge, it has that kind of sound as though it's somebody who's trying to, shall we say, screw others of money. And I think that it's one of my favourites.
So Dickens's visit to Halifax, this isn't his only connection to the town. What was it his other connection, and how did it come about?
Well, there was an earlier connection through the family of Dickens' wife. Now, in the early 1830s, the family of Dickens' wife, the Hogarths, had lived in Halifax. And a young man in Halifax in those days, called Joseph Frobisher, who eventually became the organist at Halifax Parish Church, he had known them then, and he was the man who invited Dickens to Halifax in 1858. So he connects Dickens' wife's family in the 1830s in Halifax to Dickens' visit to the town in 1858. So the Hogarth family, very briefly, the in-laws of Dickens.
They're from Edinburgh, weren't they? They came down
That's
from
right.
Scotland.
They were Lowland Scots. They'd been closely involved with both the legal and the literary side of Edinburgh. George Hogarth, who was to become the father-in-law of Charles Dickens, had known and acted for Sir Walter Scott. And George Hogarth was, by profession, a writer to the Signet, which is effectively a private Scots solicitor in
Okay.
Edinburgh. He moved around a little bit. His ambition was to enter the world of the newspaper. He wanted to become an editor and a writer. He also was a popular music critic. And he came to Halifax in 1832 as the editor of Halifax's newspaper, the Halifax Guardian, which first came into being in December 1832.
So he was the first editor.
He was the first editor of a newspaper which continues to this day because its descendant is the Halifax Courier. There were two newspapers in Halifax for many, many years in the latter part of the 19th century. They merged in 1921.
And I know from working in local studies. They are very much intertwined as newspapers.
Yes, as you all know, Jill, the Guardian was the earlier paper. It was 21 years earlier than the Courier, and the Guardian was the Tory paper, read by Anne Lister, for instance, and people like her of her status. The Courier was the Liberal paper of 1853.
So this isn't where George Hogarth actually met Charles Dickens. That was a little bit later, wasn't it? He fell out with the proprietors of the Guardian, didn't he?
Yes, he wasn't entirely happy in Halifax, and he had other fish to fry. He had the idea that it would be good to go and live in the capital and get a job there. And after about 2 years in Halifax, he moved to London and his family followed. And it was a couple of years later, in 1836, that his eldest daughter, Catherine, would meet a young aspiring journalist named Charles Dickens.
So George Hogarth, he was working, was it for the Morning Chronicle?
Yes, the Morning Chronicle is correct.
And that's how he came to meet Charles Dickens.
Yes, it was in comings and goings to the offices of that paper that they met.
How did Dickens become acquainted with Catherine?
It was being invited to her parents' home. Catherine was born in 1815 in Edinburgh. She was the eldest of a large family. By the time she met and married Dickens, she was around about 30 years old.
When did they marry?
They were married in 1846.
So Catherine, born in Edinburgh, at the time when she lived in Halifax, she must have schooled for some time. Do you know of her connections to the town while she was here?
Well, the family lived in a house on the corner of Clare Road and St John's Lane, a large terrace house built at the very beginning of the 19th century. And we have some rather vague information that she used to walk up St John's Lane to the top in order to get to a day school for girls. We don't No, we can't identify which school this was. There were a couple up in that direction, and it must have been one or other of those.
Yeah.
And her younger sister, Mary, would go with her.
So it was a very short period of her life, really, wasn't it? It was only a few years.
Yes, not much over 2 years.
She was the eldest daughter. She had rather a lot of brothers and sisters. When they moved to Halifax, there were seven of them all together, weren't there?
Seven children, as far as we know. One or two had died in infancy.
But I've read an interview with you in the Halifax Evening Courier from 2005, in which you mentioned some unique research you did that had uncovered information about Catherine's two youngest siblings. What did you discover?
And this has since been drawn upon by a biographer of Catherine Dickens. I think I may have been the first person to discover the fact that, as well as being born in Halifax, the youngest two children of George and Georgina Hogarth were born here and baptised at Halifax Parish Church a few months later, in October 1833. They were twins, a boy and a girl, Edward and Helen.
And how did you manage to discover this?
It was looking online at locations for the births of Charles Dickens' children, I think. So I'd have been looking at later census records, knowing that Hogarth had lived in Halifax. I didn't initially know that his children or any of his children were born here. And of course, the censuses from 1851 give the birthplace. So from there, I thought, well, I'll look and see whether there's any record of a baptism in Halifax. And I was really surprised to find that these children were baptized at the parish church, because in Scotland it was seen as though the Hogarth family were more inclined towards the low church, the Presbyterians. So it was quite a surprise to find the twins baptized at an Anglican church here.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can discover from census records, isn't it? Once you've found one person, you can thread your way back through other members of the family. And I mean, that must have been great to discover that. You must have been really pleased.
Well, it was a surprise, quite frankly. It's a surprise. First of all, I hadn't read much about Hogarth. I knew he came to live in Halifax, learned a bit about him, and then the fact that these two younger children were born here.
What was their life like?
Well, we know a little about their lives, and I've looked them up in various census and other records. Dickens seems to have got on very well with his in-laws, Edward and Helen, and he included them in the cast of one of his dramas in 1856. Edward got married in 1867 to the daughter of a professor of music in London, and they lived in St. Pancras. But tragically, Edward was to die of rapid consumption or tuberculosis at the age of 45. And the death of Edward caused a lot of grief to Catherine, his eldest sister. She herself was ill at the time and would die before the end of that year. His twin sister, Helen, She was to be a music teacher and a performer, partly in her own right. She did marry. She became the wife of Richard Cusack Roney. They were married in Kent, and Helen continued her musical and performance profession. Later in her life, having been a bit estranged from her sister Georgina, they grew closer together, although there seems to have remained some distance. But when Helen eventually lay dying in temporary lodgings at Liverpool in November 1890, Georgina travelled there and spent the final 3 weeks of her life with her.
They were born in the house that you mentioned earlier. It was called Shakespeare House.
Yes.
Just for anybody who's not wholly familiar with the centre of Halifax, what sort of area are we talking about?
South of the town centre, a little bit further down the slope than where we find Commercial Street and Skirkote Road. St John's Line runs up diagonally, and this house is right at the bottom.
Yeah.
So in the early 20th century, it was known as Shakespeare House, which is interesting. So it had a name after another famous English writer. However, its name has changed several times, particularly at the end of the 20th century and into the 21st. And today the building is called St John's House. Latterly, very recent years, the structure has been converted into private apartments.
It must have been a pretty big house then.
And wouldn't you need that? For...
Yes.
You'd almost certainly need space in the attics. Wouldn't they have to turn some section into a dormitory?
Once they were married, Catherine and Charles, they lived together. But also, Catherine's sister, Mary, came to live with them, didn't she? But that wasn't unusual in those times. It might seem unusual to us, but it was quite common.
Yes, the Hogarth family fractured in rather an unusual way, that after Catherine's marriage to Charles Dickens, her next sister, Mary, went to live with them and tragically died fairly soon afterwards, a young woman who never married. And later on, another sister of Catherine went to live with the family,
yeah.
Georgina, who was the longest lasting of the family who lived in Halifax and who didn't die until 1917.
She outlived everyone.
Yes, she lived to be 90 years old, and she could remember everybody from their time in Halifax and before, and didn't die till the time of the Great War.
There's stories that Dickens was very upset by the death of Mary when she died. He must have had some kind of bond with her then, shall we say.
Yes, Dickens' bonds with women, much has been written about them. We cannot be quite sure, but there was clearly some form of intimacy between Dickens and Mary. I don't mean sexual intimacy. And later on, he had this very close bond with Catherine and Mary's sister, Georgina. You're going to ask me a question about what happened to Catherine, aren't you?
If we talk a little bit, first of all, about what's publicly generally known about her, and then maybe talk a little bit about things that people might not have known about her. She had a lot of children herself, didn't she, with Dickens? And that must have taken quite a toll on her as a woman. It must have been like, you know, that she was constantly pregnant almost. They were together for 22 years. What do you know about it?
Well, I've read a biography of Catherine, and she led an interesting life, I think we'd say. Many have written that she wasn't treated very fairly by her husband later on. She had 10 children, and they would have kept her very, very busy. And I think her younger sister, Georgina, was helpful with them. but he began to neglect his wife. I think it's fair enough to say that. She became quite stout in her middle age, which may have made her less appealing to him. I shouldn't sound prejudiced, but he, of course, was living what we might say a much higher grade social life. Although she entered into this to some extent, she had family responsibilities with her children, which kept her out of the limelight.
It's interesting, really, because when they start out their relationship, being the daughter of George Hogarth, she's much more socially well connected than he is. And then he becomes this famous writer, and the tables turn. There's talk of him falling in love with an actress.
Ellen Ternan, yes, a girl, really, a young actress. And there's this uncertainty. Biographers, some will say, oh, yes, it was a full emotional and sexual relationship. Others seem to think it was less than that. Whatever it was something which may have upset Dickens' wife.
He strongly denied it, didn't he?
He
All the
did.
way through.
He always denied that there was an emotional or sexual relationship with Ellen. But eventually, the two Dickenses did live apart. And the allowance that Charles gave to Catherine was not generally considered to be particularly generous.
She took one child to live with her. And then, rather strangely, Georgina continued to live with Dickens, and keep the family. Do you think that might have been just because it was more practical? He had a bigger house and everything, and
Yes, it could have been. We can't be absolutely sure. Georgina, I mean, you can read about her. She must have been a fascinating character in her own right. Perhaps had more personality. Without wishing to be unfair to her sister Catherine, she may have been a more vivacious and interesting person and have inspired Charles rather than his wife. We have a clear indication that there was a motherliness about Georgina. She seems to have been excellent with children and managing a household. People have questioned her motives, and exactly what those were, perhaps we can't be entirely sure. She may have been seen to muscle in and take over the Dickens household. That's how some see her. But she was a great character, there's no doubt.
if we talk about Catherine, with it being history and various biographers and filmmakers all have their own take on everything, but I think she may have been overlooked a little bit and portrayed as, more downtrodden than she actually was, because she had her own ambitions. Being the wife of Dickens, she was quite well travelled, wasn't she? She did used to travel with him to America. That's how Georgina became the housekeeper, looking after the children. So she probably travelled a lot more than a lot of women would have done in those days.
Indeed, however, I think very much in the background.
Yes.
She certainly travelled. I mean, she was intelligent. And I'm sure you're going to ask me about the fact that she wrote a book or
She wrote a
produced a
book,
book.
yeah. It's quite amusing that she chose the pen name of Maria Clutterbuck, which is almost a little bit comical. It's almost as if she's displaying some kind of sense of humor there. I don't know, maybe I'm reading it wrong, or maybe it could almost be the suggestion of Dickens, really, with a name like that, couldn't it? But
Yes, and I think that is very probably the case. Strictly speaking, it was Lady Maria Clutterbuck.
oh, was
And
it?
this was a character which she would sometimes act in those little dramas which Dickens would put on in houses. She would play this character of Lady Maria Clutterbuck, and this was the name she chose as authoress of her recipe book, strictly, I think, a book of menus rather than a recipe book.
It's got rather a long title. What shall we have for dinner? Satisfactorily answered by numerous bills of fare from 2 to 18 persons. It's putting on a dinner party, basically, isn't it?
And this should remind us, I think, that Catherine Dickens would have been required to be an hostess
Yeah.
at events in the Dickens household for others. Charles Dickens had, of course, a very close coterie of friends, about perhaps half a dozen at least, who would visit regularly. No doubt Catherine would have to cater for them.
She enjoyed amateur dramatics, didn't she? And being on stage, as you've mentioned, with her character, Lady Maria Clutterbuck. I read Dickens complained that they'd had so many children and it was her fault because she came from a big family.
Well, we don't know much about family planning in early Victorian England, I think. It takes two to create a child, I believe.
Yeah, and he did come from a family of eight, so he's not far behind her. There was something that I read that he actually, in the end, he erected a bookcase between their two beds, but that just sounds like something somebody would make up. Like, it sounds like a scene from a Dickens story, doesn't it? A bookcase between a writer and his wife.
It does, and yet it may be symbolic. Who knows? I'm keeping you apart because I want to be with my books.
Yeah.
That is only an observation, and it could be quite incorrect.
I'd like to just end by saying that Catherine, when she died, she was buried in Highgate Cemetery. And interestingly for Dickens, he requested he wanted a very simple burial, didn't he? He didn't want to have a showy funeral or to be buried somewhere high status. In actual fact, he did end up in Poet's Corner in Westminster Abbey, so he wouldn't have been happy with that. Do we know where he wanted to be buried originally?
And I do remember what you say, that he wanted a simple funeral, and many feel as though he wouldn't have been particularly happy about buried in Westminster Abbey. But this was not uncommon, and some people who made these comments about wanting a simple funeral, it's been considered it was a kind of false modesty. I wouldn't like to say that in the case of Dickens, because I don't know.
There's a quote, I think, in which he said he wanted to be buried in an inexpensive and strictly private manner. At the time, there was an epitaph that was circulated that I think had been read at the funeral. And this is what it said: "To the memory of Charles Dickens, England's most popular author, who died at his residence, Higham, near Rochester, Kent, on the 9th of June, 1870, aged 58 years. He was a sympathiser with the poor, the suffering, and the oppressed, and by his death, one of England's greatest writers is lost to the world." It's that kind of sums things up a little bit, really, about the type of person he was. Although we know that he had complicated personal relationships.
Various stories and various criticisms have been told about him or aimed at him. He was a complex man. Some people thought he might have done more in actually giving money to the poor rather than profiting about getting other people to be more beneficent to the poor. But anyway, he was his own creature, and the older he got, no doubt, as he was more successful, he felt he had more right to do and say as he wished. And he didn't always get it his own way, because some of his novels were not that successful.
58 was, by our standards, quite a young age to die.
It was indeed. And when we consider that George Hogarth, his father-in-law, died earlier the same year as Dickens himself, aged in his 80s, we realise that some people did live to more extreme old age then. Dickens' health had been impaired by being involved in a rail accident not too long before his death. These things can take their toll.
It makes you wonder, really, doesn't it? If he died when he was 58 and there was a potential for him to live till he was 80, how many more novels could we have had from him?
And no doubt we'd have found out who actually murdered Edwin Drood.
Yes, of course. That was the novel he was partway through writing, wasn't it, when he died. In his will, he bequeathed some money to each servant in his employment, didn't he?
Yes, that's right. I would not think that that was out of the ordinary for somebody in his status.
Okay.
Of course, not everybody had servants and not everybody could afford to dole out money. It
Yeah.
was a considerate will.
And also his wife, they had been separated, of course, but he left her an annual income of £600.
Which was in those days generous, but in terms of Charles Dickens' will, some would say he could have been more generous, but on the other hand, they were separated. So you have to balance these things out.
I think he left some money to Georgina as well, didn't he?
Yes, he was very generous to Georgina, his sister-in-law.
It was something that he said in support of Georgina. I will merely remark of my wife that some peculiarity of her character has thrown all the children on someone else. I do not know, I cannot by any stretch of fancy imagine what would have become of them, but for this aunt who has grown up with them, to whom they are devoted, and who has sacrificed the best part of her youth and her life to them. So he was obviously grateful for everything she did.
Yes, and of course she was not much more than 10 years older than the oldest Dickens child, so she was a young aunt, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Almost like a big sister, perhaps, to some of them.
Yeah.
And she was the one who lived the longest, and really, with her death in 1917 at the age of 90, that severed the link of the Hogarths with Halifax because she'd lived here for over a couple of years as a girl.
Well, thank you for coming on History Out Loud, David.
Thank you for inviting me, and I hope it is of interest to people in Halifax to learn more about these Dickens connections.
You've been listening to History Out Loud, a podcast by Calderdale Libraries, produced and presented by Jill Carpenter. Well, that's it for another year. Thank you for tuning in to History Out Loud. I hope you've enjoyed the episodes as much as we have. Wish you all a very Merry Christmas, and we'll be back in the new year. See you then.